Tuesday, April 13, 2004, the Associated Press reports that the U.S. military stands poised outside Najaf with orders to arrest or kill cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, who is said to have pulled his resistance forces back from police headquarters and government facilities in the Iraqi holy city of Najaf, thereby fulfilling a demand the U.S. says will end the crisis. AP also reports that this could be a step toward ending the standoff in southern Iraq. This is Dori Smith with co-producer Richard Sherman. We both produce community radio at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. We're joined by journalist Dar Jamail. He's Baghdad correspondent for NewStandardNews.net, an online news service. You can read his reports online at NewStandardNews.net. Dar Jamail, you've been in Iraq just a few days. So much has happened. Just characterize what you're going through, what you're living through, and explain to us why you're there again.
Well, it's been 8 days now. That's it. So I haven't been here that long. When I was here before for the 9 weeks that I was here, it was a bad situation, but it was nothing, not even close to how it is now. I basically came in, had to circumnavigate Fallujah since the highway was closed, and was lucky even to get in that day. And it's gone from bad to worse, and it's been worsening on a daily basis. It's an extremely stressful situation. We had an Iraqi policeman who's friends with a neighbor come by our flat yesterday and warn us that either today or tomorrow there's a word out that the Mehdi militia is going to be patrolling our area of Baghdad looking for foreigners to kidnap. So we've been forced to go stock up on food and have no intentions of leaving the apartment today or tomorrow, and hopefully this will blow over. So it's an extremely stressful situation. I'm just trying not to think about, let my head run wild with the fears that this stuff brings up, and as well as all the fighting, and then with the military, the word out that they're about to pour more gasoline on the fire. It's very, very stressful. NGOs are leaving in droves. There's talk of the UN flying in, getting an airlift in here to try to get people out. And that's really how bad it is. And none of this has gotten out into the mainstream media, or at least very little of it. So it's very difficult. I came here this time, as I did the first time, to report on the true side of the occupation, of what's really going on here, how it's really affecting Iraqi people, as well as our soldiers alike, because I felt that overall the mainstream media just wasn't really getting the job done. I mean, some folks were, but overall the mainstream just simply wasn't reporting the true side of the story, rather than they were more just reporting the military side of the story. And I'm glad that I can still be here at this point and continue to do that, because I feel like it's imperative for people back home to know what is really going on here and being done in their name and with their tax dollars.
We're talking with Dar Jamail. He is reporting from Baghdad for New Standard News. I'm Dori Smith. I'm here with Richard Sherman. We're going over what's been going on in Iraq. Some of what Dar Jamail has been reporting home is that, quote, yesterday George Bush said he knew what we were doing in Iraq was right. Mr. Bush, does this include massacring unarmed women, children, and elderly people in Fallujah right now? Dar, go into a little bit more detail on what you're seeing, who is dying.
Well, the people paying the heaviest cost in all the fighting, both from the U.S. military as well as the resistance fighters and the militias, are the Iraqi civilians. In Fallujah alone, there's been over 700 people killed just in the last 8 days at this point. The soldiers are being killed, lots and lots of soldiers. In Fallujah alone, there's been over 62 at least, and many people even believe that that is an underreported number. The Iraqi people are the ones in all of the fighting in all of the cities. When you see these reports, usually back home, we only hear whether or not U.S. soldiers died. The only time we hear about Iraqis being killed is when it's in huge numbers, like the massacre in Fallujah. And as I witnessed in Fallujah, when the heavy fighting takes place, it's not a war like army against army. It's a huge, powerful military of the U.S. is going in to cities where there are fighters there resisting them, but they're doing it amongst civilians. And so it's the civilians who are paying the heaviest price. And while I'm sure there are Mujahideen included in that number of 700 killed in Fallujah, it's disproportionately the number of Iraqi civilians that are making up that body count. I mean, I personally saw dead women and children and unarmed elderly people that had been shot by U.S. snipers and killed by U.S. bombs.
Dar, one of the blogs that we have been following is entitled Baghdad Burning. The woman who writes it talks about how the phenomenon of kidnapping foreigners is really alien to the Iraqi tradition. Even at the beginning of the war and the period leading up to the war last year, foreigners basically were respected and treated in a very hospitable manner. She seems to be saying that this is a sign that the society is falling apart, is breaking down, that the indiscriminate kidnapping and possibly killing of foreigners is an aberration to Iraqi culture. Would you agree with that assertion?
Yes, she's exactly right. Every Iraqi that I've spoken with and all of my Iraqi friends, when this subject comes up, they say the exact same thing. In fact, they're the most typical response to that is when they hear about foreigners being detained, they say, these are not Iraqis that are doing this. And that's how strongly they feel about that, because they have very strict social customs and mores and norms. And this is a very new thing here for them to be doing this to foreigners. And it's people are really shocked, as well as very, very afraid. And they're afraid for the foreigners, but it also makes them very afraid for themselves, because then they now, too, know that one more step down that path means the indiscriminate kidnapping of Iraqis for whatever reason, and everyone here, it's sending huge waves of fear throughout the country and Baghdad, of people being very concerned of what this means and the statement this makes about how bad things really are here now.
Mm-hmm. One of the rationalizations that you hear in the United States for intervention in the so-called democratic process in Iraq is that there is a fear if at this point Iraqis were allowed to vote, there'd be an Islamic Republic. The overwhelming perception is that the Iranian model would be followed very closely. In an article by Tariq Ali the other day, he mentioned that in a private conversation, Ayatollah Sistani said that the worst thing in the world for Iraq would be to follow the Iranian model. And the implication was that he saw something that is supposed to exist in the United States, and that is the separation of church and state, as being a more appropriate model. I'm wondering if you have heard any discussion of that concept, the separation of church and state, and what is the likelihood that a true free election would result in a government that would respect that principle?
That seems very unlikely, because I don't have an extremely deep understanding of Islam, but what I do know from my friends and from being here for a while is that it's really impossible to separate church and state in Islam. It's all so tied in together. The religious aspects are inherent in the school teachings, for example. I mean, even in school books, for example, they cite, like in their language books, they cite verses from the Quran, because in their view, that is the most perfectly written book in the Arabic language anywhere. And so they'll use simply sentences from that to illustrate a proper sentence structure, for example. So to separate church and state, they have to, and that's what the Americans have already been trying to do here, is pull all of those books and have them rewritten without any Quranic reference, and it's simply not working. It's simply outraging people. And that's just one small example, but it affects the business structure, how people conduct business, how they look upon debt, how they look upon interest. All of these things are tied in. So it would basically entail wiping out an entire civilization and culture that's been this way for thousands and thousands of years. So I really don't see how that's possible.
It seemed extraordinary, Dar, that this White House used the language that it did when it invaded Iraq, having to do with, you know, instant democracy, freedom, and rights, and how we were going to suddenly be the Buona, bringing these things as if they were never heard of in Iraq before. But there are these traditions that I think are very confusing for Americans, having to do with imams in a position of power. We don't look at our culture as having powerful religious leaders that have political power. Talk a little bit about what it's like right now in Iraq to you as these clerics kind of are in the news so much and looking as if they are going to become a very important part of the political future of Iraq.
Well, they are the political future of Iraq, whether the U.S. wants to admit this and accept this or not. And obviously they're trying not to. They're trying to undermine them every chance they get. But the reality is they're being forced to deal with these people, and they're going to have to deal with them on their terms if they ever want any peace and stability in this country at all. They're going to have to listen to these people, and they're going to have to grant them what they're asking. Because, the way this entire society is set up, these people, and it's so different than ours, it is very difficult to understand. It's really hard to even make an analogy, but it's the equivalent of, I mean, an imam is a very gross equivalent of a mayor who is also a very well-respected and popular priest, one in the same. And so they have twice, three, five times as much power looking at it in that light as someone in a mayoral or a priest, for example, or a preacher back home. And so these are the real power brokers in the country, and they are extremely religious, and that's impossible to be separated.
Dar, to what extent would Islam and democracy be irreconcilable principles, given the fact that, in your opinion, in the opinion of many, a free election would lead to an Islamic Republic, let's say?
Well, I think most of the people here, I'll keep my opinion out of this best I can and just talk about how most people here that I've spoken with feel about it. And that is that most people do want a general election. That is the part of democracy they believe in. They want to have the freedom to choose who will lead their country, who will comprise the government of their country. They do want that. But at the same time, they're completely okay with this being a religious leader, someone like Grand Ayatollah Sistani or other people in like kind. So they, you know, it's really kind of a confusing situation, but it's both of those. They do want an open democratic election so that then they can set up the structure of their government with the people of their own choosing. The problem with the Americans is these people want to run the country, and they are all steeped in Islam, and which, of course, is perfectly okay, and that's what most people in Iraq do prefer. And this is the problem because the Americans do not want to allow this to happen.
Dar, were people surprised at al-Sadr's move? How did they articulate their feelings about what this particular cleric had done?
Most people here who, the majority of the people here, it's safe to say, in Iraq, very much disagree with this man's tactics, his brutality, and the radicalness. He's a young man. I've heard reports anywhere ranging that he's 30 years old, even down to 23 years old. No one's really certain on it for sure. But most people here vehemently disagree with his tactics and the kidnappings and the, you know, going to any lengths necessary to fight against the Americans. And again, this is the Iraqi culture. They do not promote bloodshed. They do not sanction these horrendous tactics that Sadr's been using. Most people view his militias as just a bunch of uneducated thugs that go around and carry these things out simply because they're told to do so. That they can't think for themselves. They're just following the orders of a radical. And that's how most people here view him.
Dar Jamil, you're reporting from Iraq because you care about what your country is doing there. That would be America. You're from Anchorage. Describe for us once more before we end here why you felt so compelled to take the risk of reporting first as an independent reporter and now with New Standard News from Iraq.
Because I felt that truth was simply not getting out for the most part by the mainstream media in the U.S. I've seen firsthand the disparity, the glaring disparity between what the military reports and what is really going on. And most of the mainstream media over-focuses on the military aspect and their side of the story. And I feel like people back home have no idea of how horrendous the situation is here, what our country has done to the Iraqi people. It has shattered an entire country and a people, and it is getting worse, and what their tax dollars are being spent for and what our soldiers are dying for over here of you know, to show them the reality of the situation here as opposed to the rhetoric coming from the Bush administration. And I felt strongly enough about that to come here and do my best to report that, because it's simply not getting done. And that is the basis of democracy, as an informed citizenry. And our citizenry overall in the U.S., those who rely predominantly on mainstream media, are simply uninformed or misinformed overall. And we cannot have legitimate elections with an uninformed citizenry. And so I felt like the best thing I could do is to come over and report what's really going on, so in the next election, people can make more informed decisions.
And how would you now characterize Iraq under the occupation, new war? How would you describe what's happening? Would you call it a huge policy failure? Would you call it a sort of another phase in America's military operation that there is a certain level of control to on their part? How would you characterize it?
Well, it's an absolute debacle. Overall, you know, the entire invasion was launched under false pretenses. This is glaringly apparent to everyone now. It doesn't matter what your political beliefs are. It's obvious that our country was led into Iraq under false pretenses, and now we're seeing that played out on the ground. It's an absolute debacle. The military and the government was not prepared to handle what is occurring here now, despite all the countless warnings they had from numerous sources, including people in our own military, of how much of a debacle this would be, how wrong it was to go in when we did, with the number of troops we did. And now we're seeing that played out on the ground. U.S. soldiers are dying at an extremely high rate every day, and Iraqi civilians are being killed en masse every day. And it's an absolute horrendous situation. I came here to look more into the effect of privatization on the Iraqi people and the country. And since I've been here, obviously that's a horrendous situation that's affecting people. But that's not even the big story now, because essentially now, outside of Kurdistan, the entire country is at war, and this is the occupation. It's a full-on war at this point. We have militias everywhere from all different sects fighting against the Americans, and more people joining them on a daily basis, because that's how desperate the situation is here now.
So it's not a matter of the remnants of the Saddam regime, as it were, in Fallujah, fighting it out with the Americans in, you know, small numbers that we can contain, right?
That is an absolute absurd statement. I wonder when they will ever, the Bush administration will ever let that go, because these people, even Fallujah, for example, this is a city that was vehemently opposed to Saddam. They suffered under Saddam. They fought against Saddam. So saying that these people are Saddam loyalists is just an absolute lie. And then especially, are you going to call people in the predominantly Shia South, like Najaf and Karbala, are they Saddam loyalists? They're Shia. They're the people that suffered the most under Saddam. And now these are the people fighting alongside Sunnis against the Americans.
Dar Jamil, in the various regions of Iraq you have visited, you have sometimes said that because the border containment is so bad, you feel there might be a possibility that foreign fighters or foreign members of an insurgent army, whatever you want to call it, may have gotten into Iraq. What are your thoughts on that now?
I believe simply because the borders are as wide open as they are. I came through this last time, and while I was surprised to see 48 U.S. soldiers there, they were the first ones I'd seen coming into Iraq or leaving, both this trip and the previous trip I had. There were four there, but they literally was just standing off to the side of the border smoking cigarettes, watching cars go by. I was never searched. Our car was never searched. Our bags were never searched. We were in and out of the border in less than 30 minutes. So the fact that there are foreign fighters coming in, I would be willing to bet that there's plenty here. I haven't seen any personally, but I imagine that there are some here. But as far as how much of the force fighting against the Americans they comprise, they're definitely a very, very minute percentage. I would hazard to guess easily 1% or less, because most of the people here fighting against the occupation forces are Iraqis who are in Fallujah literally fighting to maintain control of their own city. And the same situation will occur in Najaf. So there are certainly some foreign fighters coming in to basically fight the Americans. This is their chance to come and fight against a country that they have suffered under or been abused by historically for one reason or another, whether they're from Iran or Syria, for example, or even Saudi Arabia. So that's certainly occurring, but it would be a very, very small number of the people who are actually fighting against the Americans here.
And Dar, I want to remind listeners that you have actually been to Fallujah in the last 24 hours. Am I correct?
Actually, I got back 2 days ago from Fallujah. I got back, that would have been Sunday afternoon.
Okay, and we're now approaching Tuesday morning. We have heard from some other people in Iraq very consistent stories about what's going on in Fallujah. One of those people is Rahul Mahajan. He is the creator of a blog, empirenotes.org, and his report from Fallujah is interestingly titled, Destroying a Town in Order to Save It. This is really language that goes back to the Vietnam era when I was a kid, and it's chilling to think about that. There was a political discussion here having to do with Vietnam veteran, now presidential candidate, Senator John Kerry. But it was a political discussion. Now the discussion is sort of migrating into terms strictly having to do with Iraq. How do you feel about those analogies and also Rahul Mahajan's title?
I really appreciate Rahul Mahajan's analysis, and I think that is exactly the mindset and the proper choice of words to describe what is happening in Fallujah. It's the perfect way to put it, and it's very similar to the tactics used in Vietnam, and there are so many similarities between what is occurring here versus what occurred in Vietnam. And at the same time, though, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but another parallel that keeps coming to my mind is Beirut, is that we have so many different militia now from so many different sects for so many different reasons coming together to fight against the Americans. And if the Americans leave, I mean, in all likelihood, they will begin to fight amongst themselves. But as long as the Americans are here, they're all grouping together to fight against the Americans, and using destroying a town to save it is really what is occurring in Fallujah, and obviously what we're going to see played out on the ground in Najaf if they follow through with the threats that they've now made. But it's very apt description exactly of what is occurring.
Darjmal, what are your thoughts about your own plans in Iraq right now? You said that things were very, very difficult there for you and others from the United States and other countries who are trying to cover this war. What do you think you might do in the coming days and weeks?
Well, that's really hard to say. It's so volatile that literally it depends on when you ask that question what my response will be. If you ask me another hour, it will probably differ than what I say right now. But right now we're prepared to, we have a bunch of food and water, and we're prepared to just sit home and stay inside and stay off the streets for at least the next couple of days. And I'm prepared to do that for longer if necessary. I do not want to leave, but if the situation stays as it is, then I am definitely prepared to leave for my own safety. I will consider maybe going to Kurdistan. It is much safer up there. It's essentially an entirely different country, especially with all this other bloodshed occurring. And so I'm considering that, and then if things don't simmer down while I'm up there, then maybe heading on out. But it's extremely dangerous, and NGOs and other humanitarian organizations are all leaving in the droves by the day at this point. Bridges to Baghdad is pulling out entirely today, for example. So it's very disconcerting. It's extremely stressful and volatile here. So just taking it a day at a time at this point, and as soon as I can figure out, you know, things stay the way they are, as soon as we can figure out a safe mode to get out, that's what we're going to do. Because the difficult situation is the highway going to Jordan is extremely dangerous. We've had reports of foreigners being pulled over from the cars driving them in, and pulled out of the car, shot, and left on the road. The other option is flying out of Baghdad. Getting on a flight is difficult because there aren't that many flights. But if you do get on one, then that begs the question of getting to the airport. The road to Baghdad Airport is extremely dangerous. There's attacks, many attacks there on a daily basis. So right now, me and many of my friends were basically just hoping for some minor miracle of a U.S. change of policy that would basically put the lid back on the pressure cooker, so to speak, and hopefully give us all a little bit of a reprieve from this insanity.
It's hard to imagine what things are like in Crawford, Texas, or the White House Situation Room on any level, the Pentagon. It's hard to imagine those conversations, isn't it? Because we've only heard so much colorful rhetoric. It's just hard to know what to expect, and that's a very unsettling way to live. I mean, day to day, we don't know what our government is going to do we?
No, we really don't. And for me to even hold out any hope of a drastic change in policy here, which is the only thing that could possibly occur to help improve things here somehow, I think I'm being very, very much overly optimistic and idealistic, because they obviously have their own mindset, their own agenda, and they're moving forward with their plans, despite what the facts on the ground are, despite how it's affecting both people in America, U.S. soldiers, and people in Iraq. They obviously have not paid any attention to that from day one, and that they would change now is simply just not going to happen.
Darjmal, do you have any kind of suggestion for those who have been listening to your reports from Iraq for the past few months? What can listeners do, both to support you and to try to get the government to come up with a safer, more sane policy for Iraq?
Well, to support me, I just hope that everyone spreads the news stories that I'm sending out, because this is the truth of what's going on in Iraq in the name of people of America. And everyone needs to read this. Everyone needs to know what the military is doing here, how it's affecting our reputation, how it's affecting what people think about Americans. And to get this news out, and not just mine, but get read news from websites from different countries, France, Germany, even BBC, and talk about it with your friends, and really get this discussion going about the true situation in Iraq and what's being carried out here by the American government and military. So I would say, you know, the best way to support me is to go and spread the news. And the other the other way is to really pick up the phone and pick up a pen and contact senators and congresspeople and express the outrage of what our government is allowing to occur in all of our name here in Baghdad, and write them letters and say, look, I know this is what is occurring. Are you aware of what's occurring? Inform them. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that many of them are simply not truly aware of what's occurring on the ground here, and let them know, and let them know the outrage, and let them know that you will not stand for this being done in our name and with our tax money. We're funding all of these atrocities that are occurring every day here in Iraq with our tax dollars. And write letters to the editor. There's many different things that people can do and organize, discuss within the community how to write letters en masse and make phone calls en masse to these people and express the outrage, because it's time. We have to have this policy changed here. They've moved forward with the same policy from day one, and we see where we are now. And if they keep going forward, I shudder to think of what this place will look like even in the next week if we keep going forward like this. So we need this action to occur as soon as possible. We need this to occur right now. It's a terribly desperate situation here, and the only thing that's going to save it at this point is a drastic change in U.S. policy.
Dar Jamail is covering Iraq for New Standard News. You can go online to read his reports home at newstandardnews.net. Then send it to as many people as you know and urge them to look closely at what can be done to stop an American and Iraqi tragedy and crisis. This is an emergency of the most serious kind. Listeners, I hope you'll both read Dar Jamail's reports home from Iraq and also send them forward to people who also care and want to know the truth about Iraq. Dar Jamail, thank you so much for joining Richard Sherman and me. I'm Dori Smith. We wish you peace and Godspeed.
Thank you both for having me.
Dar Jamail is Baghdad correspondent for newstandardnews.net, an online news service. You can read his reports and find his blog at newstandardnews.net. I'm Dori Smith with co-producer Richard Sherman. We produce community radio at WHUS Stores, the University of Connecticut. For further information about this program, write to me at rcrradio@aol.com. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or the University of Connecticut.